Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Alternative Facts Podcast coming at you. Fourth episode. You're listening to it right now. Damn, it just feels like there's so much good new music coming out. So many big new albums coming out in the alt world. Here's a single Haim put out this last week. It's called Want You Back. Just know that I want you back. They took their time with this album. Their debut came out back in September 2013. This new one, it's called Something to Tell You, comes out July 7th. So that's almost a full 4 years for them in between albums. It's go big or go home time for Haim. We'll probably talk about them in more detail in another episode closer to album release. But anyway, before we get too far ahead of ourselves, my name's Chris Payne. I'm a staff writer at Billboard. I host this podcast every week. We talk about rock, indie, pop punk, emo, metal, indie electronic, weird R&B, maybe. Really any kind of alternative music. It's an ever-evolving definition. First episode drops a day after Paramore came out with its new single, Hard Times. And on the first episode, I chatted with Kevin from Charts about how that song was doing on Billboard's charts, about whether or not it would be another hit, another ain't it fun kind of thing. Well, on this week's charts, we got our first bit of good news. Hard Times rose from 28 to 18 on alternative songs. That's a chart that shows how songs are doing on alternative radio stations. And well, these numbers mean Paramore has made a big jump. Over the next couple weeks, we'd really need to see it go into the top five to really flex its muscles, prove it's here to stay. Because if it's top five at alternative, maybe in number one, then there's a really good chance it goes to top 40 radio, that's pop radio, and starts to play a lot there. So keep following Hard Times along with us. Just Google Billboard Alternative Songs Chart to see how it's doing. And that chart updates every Tuesday, Monday, so check on the Billboard website for that. Follow along Paramore. Album's out tomorrow. And yeah, I really look to this podcast to make it special, different for you all, have discussions you can't hear anywhere else, talk about alternative artists on Billboard's charts, me chatting and learning from other writers around Billboard's offices, and of course, interviews with the musicians themselves. We've got a little bit of all of that this week. Up next is a chat I had with Maria Sherman. She's another music writer. She's a full-time freelancer, meaning she writes for all sorts of different places. She has something really neat coming up, actually, on My Chemical Romance for Billboard, for Billboard.com really soon. More on that later. Here's a chat I had with Maria on Monday about new music coming out that we're excited for. So, Maria, thanks for coming on. What are some things you've been into lately?
Oh, my gosh. I feel like this year has been especially great. And I was like talking to my friend Matthew Perpetua, who works at BuzzFeed. He used to do more music criticism sort of stuff. And I think he was the one who told me that like music gets good like every like 3 or 5 years or something, whatever. Whatever the year ends in a 7, it's good. And I was like, 2017 is great.
07 was dope.
Yeah. And 97 probably. Yeah. No, there are some hits for sure. Good summer pop punk jams. I have been listening to probably the new Perfume Genius Nonstop that just came out last week. Oh, when does this thing happen?
This will be out on Thursday.
Okay, yeah, so whoops, whatever.
It still holds true.
Yeah. The new Perfume Genius.
It's a new album out. It's still the new Perfume Genius.
Right. It'll be new for a while. I think he takes some breaks to like live life. Have some romantic adventures in which to write beautiful like orchestral songs about. I really have been into that. I love the new Charlie Bliss because I really feel like they have finally just become Josie and the Pussycats.
Okay.
Don't they like remind you of the band, like the band from the movie Josie and the Pussycats with like Tara Reid as a drummer? I just feel like that's kind of their vibe. Yeah, I just interviewed Pale Hound today. Her record's incredible, and I feel like she might be an artist both of you guys are interested in. Have you spent any time with her stuff?
I've definitely seen her on some show or seen them.
Yeah, I guess it's a full band, but it's like mostly her doing...
like maybe a Baby's All Right show.
That makes sense. I feel like Stereo Gum has been on them for a while. This is like her second record coming out sometime this summer. When I first started listening to Pale Hound, I thought it was like too similar to Waxahachie, and I was like, oh man, there's so many Baby Crutchfield twin-esque bands starting, and then I've just gave it another go and realized it's something different and unique and cool.
There's another Waxahachie album coming.
I know. I'm so excited. I haven't heard it. Have you?
No, neither have I.
The single's really good. Silver, have you heard that?
I haven't heard the single either. No, yeah. I'm behind. I really liked the Ivy Trip album from a couple years ago.
Oh man, it's so good.
I'm sure the album will be dope.
It's gonna be great. She's just a brilliant songwriter, and it's about like she was like dating a guy for a really long time and they broke up, and I just think she's such a good breakup songwriter. That's bad. That makes it sound like tumultuous relationships. I don't know, but it's gonna be good.
Have you been into the Paramore songs that have come out so far?
Oh my gosh, yeah. When I first heard Hard Times, I thought I didn't like it, but I just watched the video and I was like, oh no, they're doing this like weird 80s thing that's going to be so derivative. And it's not, because I think it's like impossible for them to do something that isn't, that doesn't have like the Paramore stamp on it.
Yeah. Yeah, the song is just so well crafted. Like, if you think about Misery Business, like the verses and the chorus are all very... very distinctly sectioned off. It's like big build-ups, stop, huge chorus, back to verse, awesome bridge. It has that going for it. And this is another one of those songs where it's just the hooks are so tight, the vocal parts, the instrumentals.
The guitars on that song are really incredible. Like, give what's-his-face all the credit. Taylor? Taylor?
Taylor York.
I always think it's Tyler for some reason. I think it's, whatever, 21 Pilots, dude, has ruined my perception of
Tyler Joseph York.
Yeah, I just, like, I don't
Taylor,
know.
Taylor.
That guy, he rips. I feel like I just didn't give him enough credit because I'm of a former Paramore generation.
Yeah, it is interesting them moving away from being a really guitar-heavy band. And I think if they want to be big, want to just continue the momentum they had from the self-titled album, that's just sort of where, like, Top 40's at.
Right.
You know, you gotta, every artist who's big pretty much in some way molds themselves to, you know, the
right.
zeitgeist. So it's no, like, diss on them, but they're just going with what's big right now and making it kind of their own.
Right. And I also wonder if it's just, like, they have always been sort of interested in this music and are finally, like, letting us in on the secret. Because even with, like, the last self-titled record, knowing that, like, they, like, hail from Tennessee and there's a lot of, like, gospel sort of music. And then there are moments where, like, Haley is, like, singing with, like, a choir. And it just, like, makes a lot of sense for where they came from but just hadn't been exposed to for the first decade of that band. So this might just be, like, oh, they were really into, like, some 80s synth-pop stuff that we just did not know about.
Yeah, and Zach had been doing his side project Half Noise, which is like synthy chill kind
right,
of music.
Yeah,
and he's back in the band, so that could have had to do with it.
also wonder if it was maybe just like a remarriage of convenience, because I know Aaron Gillespie from Under Oath was drumming with Paramore live for a minute. And isn't he? He's doing stuff. Did he go back to Under Oath?
I just saw him with Under Oath. I saw them opening for Bring Me the Horizon a couple months ago.
That's sick. I love all of the stuff. Bring Me the Horizon.
Their last album. I didn't really listen to it last year, but I've been listening to it more this year, and the album rips.
I got Drowned stuck in my head, just like at the grocery store, minding my own business. It's so good. They are a band that's like found their niche and has crafted like a world around it. It's
yeah,
very
they really
impressive.
Have. And I think because there were so many metalcore bands that popped up late 2000s, and they've actually morphed their sound and evolved into something that really makes sense now and sounds contemporary, because electronic music is a decent influence in the sound of their last album.
Right, yeah, and I think they've always kind of flirted with that. They weren't no, like, Enter Shikari, where it's almost like obnoxious video game level sort of stuff. They've mm-hmm. always kind of been, like, a synthy band. I also think there are a lot of moments in, like, their newer stuff that remind me of Linkin Park,
which is
where it's, like, but, like, Hybrid Theory Linkin Park or something, or, like, some of those albums around that time, not the new Linkin Park stuff, which is, like, really wild. I'm excited to hear that record when that comes out.
So you wild is what you would use to describe it.
Yeah, like what was the last single? It was so bizarre.
The one that looked like a Mad Libs of Linkin Park Adventures, or it's like Linkin Park with Pusha T. And I don't remember the rest of it.
Oh, Kiara, maybe?
She was on Heavy. She's on the song that's been
out.
Yeah,
that's... I have no idea. But like, cool. All pop or rock acts should throw us for a little loop.
They totally should, because bands like Linkin Park were so ahead of the curve in the early 2000s, and critics just gave them so much shit when they were so much more original than, like, the White Stripes and the Strokes.
Right. I totally agree with that.
Retro.
Also, do you think there's an impending rap rock revival?
I don't know. I think a lot of people are enthusiastic for it, but I just don't really hear the music yet.
I don't think so, because I think it's also a thing where it's, like, so guitar-heavy that, like, it'll take a minute before that, I don't know, comes back in vogue, I guess, for lack of a better term. But it's interesting, because I feel like all the kids who grew up on nu metal are, like, adults now, if they weren't adults then, and are learning... I don't know. You can agree with me or not, but I feel like there's a sort of move, and I don't know if it's just, like, internet culture or whatever, where people who used to feel shame for liking a certain type of music in adolescence don't really anymore, and I don't know if it's just because it's becoming more accepting. This is kind of specific to emo and pop punk, but also I would say nu metal and, like, rap rock, that, like, there could be a revival, and I think people would be open to it.
It's definitely open, like, with the gatekeepers, because people who work in media and people who work in venues and book festivals, people who, like, do the things we do, it's they're that age now where they grew up with it, where of course it's going to be more like okay, because it's what they rep, it's what they're about, and it's not just like an older generation sticking their nose up at it anymore. Like that's what it was like when I was in school,
right,
loving stuff like Paramore or Fall Out Boy or Linkin Park, and then reading reviews of it or seeing like older critics deal with it, and they all just hated on that stuff because, like, it wasn't, like, tasteful or whatever. But now it's more people like us who are in the game and, like, pushing them out.
Sorry. Sorry, not sorry, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but to get back to our nu metal revival postulation, I definitely think there's some forces in play for it. And I think, also, you can talk about ourselves working in media all we want, but who will really make it happen is the artists. And a lot of the artists, too, are our age or a little bit younger. And, you know, they grew up with this stuff firsthand. And I think a lot of them are friendly to it. They're maybe just not necessarily making that kind of music now.
Right. But I think if anything is kind of like foundational for like our generation, or whatever, of music industry professionals, then there is going to be some, I don't know, there's going to be love for it forever. I just realized I interviewed Charlie Bliss, who we were just talking about, and their drummer told me the first song he ever learned was Break Stuff, because his drumming teacher was like, so what do you listen to? And he's like, I don't know, what my parents listen to, the Beatles? And he was like, hold on. Brought out, like, busted out a boombox, played Break Stuff, and was like, play along to this. And then a monster was born, and now he's in a pop band. So thank you, Fred Durst.
Thanks so much to Maria for coming by. Go follow her on Twitter.
She's great. Her Twitter handle is Maria Shurm, M-A-R-I-A-S-H-E-R-M. She'll be on the show again very shortly, maybe as soon as next week. Before we move ahead, though, I'm going to share a quick word from our sponsor.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, next up, artist interview. You're about to hear me chatting with Derek Whibley, frontman of Sum 41. You know the hits. Dude also has a really inspiring, really riveting life story to tell about his life past few years. Actually, when I was preparing for this interview, doing my research, I read an interview that Maria did not too long ago with Derek. So then I chatted with him, got him to talk about what he was like in high school, and the way his last couple years, way fast forwarding, the way his last couple years have been absolutely life-changing for him, recently for the better. I think this is going to be a good inspirational one for you guys. Here it goes. We were talking about press in America before. What is press like? Is there any country that sticks out to you as like, wow, doing press, doing interviews there is crazy different?
Yeah, Germany.
Okay, tell me about that.
Well, not every interview, but especially in the earlier days, it was more funny because when you're a new band over there and you're young kids, and I don't know if it's just the language barrier or the accent or if they really just don't like you at first, it comes off as like, I remember we came over there with a brand new album. They're like, so why does this new album suck so bad? And you're like, oh, well, I don't know why it sucks so bad. We did our best. And like, sounds exactly like Blink-182. So you get stuff like that. You don't really get that as much over here.
Man, yeah, it's like, I guess you would have to talk to a decent amount of people, especially journalists over there, to know if that's really what they're like, or maybe that was just one weird dude doing a bit. Like that's his thing.
It could be, but that always stuck out for me as one of the funniest kind of interviews. And that was in the early days, probably like 2001 or two.
So that would have been like an all-killer, no filler
Around
area.
Does Look Affected, all-killer area, yeah.
So, yeah, tell me about how the tour is going.
The tour is going great. We're out right now with Pierce the Veil, and that's been really cool. It's been about 2 weeks, and I think we got another 2 weeks left. And then it's off to Europe again for festivals in the summer, and Asia, like you said. And yeah, we're just kind of like just going. You know, we just did a couple of festivals. We did the Carolina Rebellion Festival the other day, and that was really great. That was our first time on that. And we're just kind of bouncing around from our own shows to festivals and all sorts of things.
Yeah, so you guys played a show last night, and you're towards the end of a busy day today in New York, doing a ton of press, going from publication to publication in different buildings. A busy day for people listening. So how does it feel today? Like, how was the show last night, and what's it like just getting up and doing tons of press?
It's just kind of part of your day in a way. I mean, we're sort of, you know, we're working and we're out on tour, and this is kind of what you do. And I mean, it helps that it's in New York too. I love coming here, so it's just, you know, it's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, there's much worse things I could be doing than just talking about myself all day.
Right? So you like talking about yourself?
I don't, but there are worse things I could be doing.
I mean, I like talking about myself.
I mean, you know, I like it to a certain degree. I mean, I don't purposely schedule interviews just to talk about myself, but if that's what I have to do today, well, I don't mind.
Have you always been
the main person in the band doing press? Has there ever been like another usual person?
It used to be our old drummer and I, because he was, you know, very sort of loud and talkative kind of guy. I sort of handle a lot of the press. I mean, the thing is, like, I write the song, so usually,
yeah,
the questions are always geared towards that, so I end up doing more of the press.
Yeah, I'm thinking probably Tom from doing Gob, because he was the front man of that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking that, like, he probably has a good amount of experience too doing press.
Yeah, he does. Totally. We all do stuff. It's just when there has to be one, it will fall to me.
Mm-hmm. What is, like, you say you all do stuff, what is Brown Sound's thing? Like, what's his thing besides guitar?
Like, what's his thing that he does, like, on tour?
Does he have, like a thing?
He's, like a video game guy. He's really into video games. He just installed, like, I don't want to call it a big screen TV, but, like, it's big screen because it's in his bunk. So, I mean, you know, that's, like, 6 inches above his head, and it's big. I don't know. It's probably, like, 30 inches, and it's attached to the top of his bunk, so he can just sit there, lay in there, and play video games.
Is it, like, 6 inches above him?
Yeah. I don't know. He's got really bad eyes, he says, so he says it's fine for him. But I mean,
from that game or yeah, from before?
I don't know. It's probably from gaming, I guess.
So you've known him a long time, I guess. He's
I've known him since 14 years old.
How did you guys first meet?
He was sitting beside me in my second class in the first day of ninth grade.
Was there anything that made you guys talk? Do you remember?
Well, it was the first day of ninth grade, and you're just sort of, like, meeting people for the first time. He happened to be sitting to my left when I got to my transportation in auto tech class. And I was like, hi, I'm Derek. And he said, I'm Dave. And we instantly started talking about music and found out he played guitar, I played guitar, and he was in a band, I was in a band. And then cut to a couple years later, we're in a band together.
There you go.
And Cone, I met him in the first class. Same thing. He was sitting beside me, and he played bass. Cut to a couple years later, he's in the band.
That was a solid first day. I guess it was your first day of high school.
First day of high school, yeah. First morning, first two classes.
Yeah, first two. What was the class that you met Cone in?
It was a computer tech class or something like that.
What was your high school like?
In what way? I mean,
just what comes to mind now when you think of your high school?
I don't know if it's your typical sort of high school experience. I mean, I definitely didn't hang out with too many people. It didn't feel like there was anybody very cool at school. You know, it was like a lot of jocks and stuff, and people I didn't think were very cool at all. And turned out to not be cool now. I don't know. I think it was pretty typical.
What are, like... Because I know, like jocks, like, probably football is the biggest sport in America. What are the jocks defined by in, like, because this was Ontario near Toronto?
Yeah, we had rugby and lacrosse.
That was, like, their go-to stuff?
That's kind of what our school did, I guess. I don't know. I didn't really pay attention. To be honest, like, that's all I can remember. They may have played other sports. I just didn't really pay attention to it.
So was punk rock at all a thing in your high school?
Not
was it
at
just
all.
Of you and your friends?
It was just me and maybe three other people. And, everyone thought we were really weird, and we just didn't hang out with anybody. Nobody liked us at all. We sit in the cafeteria, and people throw French fries at us and stuff. But we actually liked that because we looked at those people as, like, the biggest losers we could see. You know, like, they were just such losers to us. But we were called the losers. But, I mean, I don't know if we just sort of knew more or felt like we were just cooler than they thought we were. I don't know what it was, but, you know, like, we would look at the kind of music they listened to and the way they acted and just thought it was, you know, kind of jockey and typical and douchebaggy.
Do you remember what music they were into?
Well, it was sort of like the popular, I guess, what you would call R&B of the time. And, I don't really know. I can't think of what it was, but like what was popular at that time. But it just wasn't very cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't really remember the kind of, like, I listened to rock music and punk rock music especially in high school, so I didn't really pay attention to what was kind of popular at the time.
Yeah. When was the last time you thought about high school this much?
When I left high school.
Yeah. So the lyrics of Fat Lip are kind of sort of accurate, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Fat Lip for us was like exactly who we were at that time. And that's what we intended to write that song about. It was just kind of what we did and who we were. And that video was just, you know, exactly the same.
What's it like having Dave back in the band?
It's great. It's really great having Dave back in the band because we were always such great friends, like all of us. And when he left the band, there wasn't any sort of bad or weird reason why he left. He had his own reasons, and everything was great, you know. So when he came back, we just picked up where we left off. There was nothing. Nobody had to apologize for anything. There was nothing weird. It was just like, okay, yeah, cool. Let's do this again.
Mm-hmm. And the record really seems to reflect having him back in the band, because a lot of it sounds like thrash, like Slayer songs, the guitar parts, the fast percussion.
I guess so. You know, I don't know. I don't really think about it. I mean, whenever I'm writing stuff, it just sort of comes out. And I think having Dave, I mean, half the record I had already written before Dave came back. So I think there was talk of Dave possibly coming back. I don't really remember what was sort of coming at the time, but you know, when Dave came back in, the first thing he played was a guitar solo on a song called God Damn I'm Dead Again, and you could definitely hear Dave instantly right away on that. It was just, you know, I'd saved this section for a guitar solo for a long time, and then when Dave came in, he did it in one day, and it was just, you know, the song was complete and it felt like Dave was back.
And the record's so autobiographical for you. What's it been like touring behind this album? You wrote about your recovery from alcoholism.
Yeah. I mean, I always write about what I'm going through or what's going on in my life or people's lives around me, just basically whatever I see or witness or go through myself. So this was just kind of no different. It's just what I was going through at the time. I'd just gotten out of the hospital, and I was learning how to live life completely differently, and everything was new, and there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of insecurities, a lot of questions, a lot of fear, and just sort of like going through all those things, all those different emotions, and trying to write music at the same time.
Yeah, like how's just in general, how do you feel? Like, how do you feel like you're at now?
I feel really great now. I mean, I think you're always learning and you're always growing, and you know, I don't ever feel like, oh, well, now I'm great. I'm here. You know, it's just you're still in the process of getting better and hopefully getting better and better.
Mm-hmm. Do you find like you have a lot more energy to tour and then like go
I do.
Do press, stuff like
I
this?
I do. I used to think that, you know, how could I get through tour without having drinks? Because there are so many times that you're so tired and you just have a couple of drinks and you're like, you know what? I feel great. I can do this now. And it gets you through. And also, especially for me, I'm kind of on the more of a shy person. I don't really open up very easily, and drinking used to help with that. And so it becomes like an excuse, or you would say, I would say anyway, like, well, I need it to get through tour. I need it to get through all these interviews. I need it to, you know, be more energetic on stage. Now I find for myself that, you know, it took a while, but I feel now better than I used to on stage and on tour, and I have more energy, and you know, it just feels better for me.
Yeah. Is it at all difficult being on tour, like when you're recovering from alcoholism, like with alcohol being around, things like that?
I'm sure it can be. It hasn't been for me yet. And the only reason I think that it's been fine for me is just because I really don't want to drink. You know, I think if I was like really having a hard time, you know, not drinking, I think the road would probably be pretty difficult for me. But I just don't really want to. I really enjoy what I'm doing in my life right now. So it's not like I have to try to keep it away. I don't even want it.
Yeah, it sounds like you were just kind of using it as a crutch.
Mm-hmm. And there was lots of times I was drinking when I didn't actually want it because I felt like I had to because I have to get through this. So now that I've been able to get through things without it, I'm like, well, good. I didn't really want it at all that time anyway.
Yeah, that's awesome. That sounds like a really healthy way of processing it now.
And, you know, that's how I am right now. Who knows in the future? You know, things change. You never know. So, but as of right now, everything's great.
Mm-hmm. I know your mom was so important with your recovery. Mm-hmm. How much do you keep in touch?
Oh, my mom all the time. I mean, I was just texting with her before this interview. I met Kevin Bacon earlier, and she's a big fan, so I sent her a photo of Kevin Bacon and I.
There's a really bad degrees of Kevin Bacon joke in there somewhere, but I'm not even going to touch that. Tell me how you met him.
He was being interviewed somewhere where, and then I was up next. So we were there a little early, so I watched a bit of his interview, and then we started talking backstage, and then there was a photo.
Did you just say, like, hey, my mom's a really big fan?
I did not. You know, I was almost going to say that, but I don't know if that sounds cool, you know. For I think other people are like, oh, your mom likes me, great. But I was thinking about that, and be like, yeah, but my mom's actually younger than him, so he might still think that's actually kind of cool. Because like, if somebody came to me like, my mom's a big fan of you, be like, oh man, we're there now. But for him, like, but my mom is 10 years younger than you, so
my mom, who's this age, she thinks you're awesome.
Yeah.
Are there any other weird meetups you've had where you ran into random celebrities doing some 41 things?
That always happens, yeah. I'm trying to think of who. I mean, in the earlier days, I remember I got some advice from Ice-T once that I thought was kind of unusual. But I was at a party, and he just came up to me, and he introduced himself, and he was like, yo, I'm going to give you some advice. I was like, okay. And he goes, the only thing harder than being the Mac is stay in the Mac. And then he walked away. And I thought, well, thanks, Ice-T. I'll remember that.
That's a pretty great cool. Ice-T interaction.
Yeah, I know.
What was, when you did SNL, what was that like? Did you meet lots of people then?
Yeah, we've done SNL a couple times. So I think it was the first time I was in the hallways and looking at all the photos that they have framed up there. And I just heard right behind me, somebody came up right in my ear and just said, hot soup. And I turned around and it was Chevy Chase. He was just like in the hallway by himself, and I was like, oh my god, it's Chevy Chase. And then he just walked away, and I was like, hot soup.
That's, yeah, I guess if you're Chevy Chase walking around SNL, like,
he just whispered it in my ear, just goes like that. Hot soup. And it made sense once I saw it was Chevy Chase. But yeah, he did like a little cameo on that day.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty funny.
Remember, I was reading about your first gig back. It was in Los Angeles, right? Mm-hmm. It was kind of a low-key thing, low pressure.
Yeah.
Take me through that. What was it like coming back on stage for the first time?
Well, we started getting offers for shows that were going to be still in a year from when we were getting those offers. And I was like, well, I can't say yes to anything because I don't know if I can make it on stage. Like, I have no idea. I'm like, yeah, I'm writing music and we're recording an album, but I don't know if I can go on tour. I have no idea. So I said, you know, let's like book a couple shows, not really tell anyone. It's not going to be Sum 41. I'm going to get a couple friends together to be my band, and I'll go and play a few songs and just see if I can stand on stage. And, you know, I did the first show, and I was so terrified that very first show. And I did it, and it was about an hour and 5 minutes, hour and 10 minutes. And I came off stage, and my manager was there, and I said, book me a whole year. I'm ready to go. Like, this is easy. I got it. It just all came back the second I got on stage. Everything felt totally normal. And, that's when things really got going. And I was like, I'm going to finish this record and start booking tours. And that got everything started.
Yeah, I mean, an hour, 10 minutes or whatever, that's not a small set. That's, like, longer than a Warped Tour set.
Yeah.
Was this at all in the period when you played that show, were you still at all having a hard time standing up or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, normally I was having a hard time at home like when I was rehearsing for it, I wasn't able to stand for rehearsal. I had to sit the whole time. And I remember thinking, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I just kept thinking and having the faith that, you know, adrenaline will kick in and it should be just second nature. I've been doing this for so long. It should just work. And I'm just going to, I mean, you'll never know until you just try. So I just jumped out there and figured if I fall after three songs, well, then I fall after three songs.
And so it was a little bit after this that you reached back out to like Cone and everyone else who was in the band at that point and started to put the work together to get Sum 41.
Yeah, and then once I did those shows, everything started going real quick. So, I mean, I really needed to get those shows out of the way to really just like put it all in, you know, in motion, and then things started moving. And everything came together really quickly after that. I finished the record, finished all the writing, and we got in the studio and booked tours, and everything just started falling into place.
Even if you're not blogging on the blog right now, are there any things you want to plug, shout out, things you have going on like that? band related or whatever?
Not really, no. I mean, we just kind of talked about everything that's going on in my life. There's not a whole lot outside of Sum 41. It pretty much consumes my entire life right now.
I mean, I've glanced at your tour schedule, and I can see up and through August. Yeah, there's not much besides Sum 41 going on there.
There's no holidays. There's no breaks. I mean, again, there's nothing that I'm doing other than, you know, traveling and playing rock shows, which is what I wanted to do. You know, it's great.
Yeah, I mean, you get to hang out with and see Green Day and System of a Down.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to those shows. I haven't seen Green Day in a long time. And of course, you know, they're always great. So I'll be looking forward to see that. System of a Down, one of my favorite bands, that'll be great too. I haven't seen them in years either.
Yeah, because I probably both of them would have been like influences. Like they were established. They were big when Sum 41 was just starting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Green Day, obviously. I mean, that was my ninth grade, you know, when Dookie came out. And, so through high school, they were the big band.
Were you, so like you were freshman in 94?
I was 14.
Oh, that's perfect. That's a good time to get into Dookie.
Yeah, totally.
Cool. Well, is there anything else you want to touch on?
No.
Shout everything out? Yeah, we covered a lot.
I mean, I just don't have anything else.
Cool. Yeah, it's a wrap then.
Yeah, thanks to Derek for coming by the Billboard office for that interview. Like we were talking about, Sum 41 is a new album out. It's called 13 Voices. In stores, streaming. They're also on tour all through the end of the summer. It's a world tour across North America, Europe, Asia. So there's a really good chance that if you're into Sum 41, they're coming to your country. And seriously, just want to shout out Derek for him being so brave and so forward to talk about what's been going on in his life for the past 3 years. Just showing up in the office and chatting about that stuff with a stranger like me, you know, I think having stories like that out there really gives a light to those who might be going through something similar. Like, you know, he nearly died. His kidneys and liver were close to giving out. This was 2014, but he quit drinking, was nursed back to health. First show back that we talked about, that was only a year later after that, his hospital stint and everything. And now he's going back full force, touring again. I found it really inspiring. So thanks to Derek for coming by, and thanks for Maria for chatting. We'll have her back soon. Like I said, maybe as soon as next week. We'll be back next Thursday for that next week episode. To make sure you get it, subscribe. Head to iTunes, search for hashtag alternative facts, all one word, in the podcast app of your phone. Get it every week. Also, one thing about podcasting, it's kind of hard to get feedback. A lot of people listen, but, you know, there's no comment section. There's no really direct way right away to say what you think. So I'd really appreciate it if you could give me a star rating on the podcast on iTunes, and also write in some feedback. What you think of the show, what you want to hear more, what you'd like to see covered. And you can also follow me on Twitter to get updates as well. Hit me up there. Let me know what you think of the show. My handle is CPain on a plane. Or just search for Chris Payne, CHRISPAYNE. I'm the first name that comes up on Twitter. That's all I got. So I'll see you guys next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently, so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.